grateful to have Sally Cook here. I actually want to invite Nick up to introduce her because they have a special connection. And again, Sally, we're just grateful. We're grateful to be brothers and sisters in Christ. We're grateful to hear your passion, your heart, but how God is alive and active in your ministry and how we can train and supporting and just inspired by who you are and what God is doing. So Nick, come.
I'm going to keep it short because I want to give the floor to Sally pretty soon, but we all know about trafficking and the disaster that it is around the world and in California, especially where you're in a wealthy area, traffic seems to be more dominant form of crime and things like that. But it's not often that we get God calling us to go to Canaan and leave everything behind and go, and this is where you're serving. And it takes a lot of courage, and it takes a certain level of grit, which Sally and Chuck have in plenty. They were called, and they came, they left a life behind in Los Angeles and came here and started Hope Refuge, which is, I'll let her give you the details, but it treats trafficked youth, generally girls, there's been a few boys, and brings them back to health, which is incredible. The numbers are insane. And this is a drop in the bucket, but it's a big drop in the bucket. And this is how God is working to heal broken lives. So with that, Sally Cook, please.
Thank you. Thanks, mate. You're awesome. These guys are awesome. Oh, thank you. Well, it's so great. I'm so glad I get to be here today. And thank you for inviting me to share with you what's going on and what's on our hearts. So it would be good, actually, just to find out, just in the room, how many of you are really familiar with trafficking and have been hearing a bit about it? Was this coming? Oh, good. Oh, great, great. How many of you saw Sound of Freedom recently? That's where that came out. Okay. Right.
So what?
Sound of Freedom.
The film.
No. There's a movie came out, a movie that was... it was very shunned by Hollywood, but it was on trafficking, mainly in Colombia. So really, what you're going to hear today is about trafficking. It does look very different here in America. But America is the number one demand, worldwide. So that is the reputation we've got to consider now, that is the reputation around the world, is that America is being known for being a predator of children. So this is a conversation we have to have, which is why I get so excited, and I'm always pleased to bring awareness to this issue, because I think it always starts with awareness, and I think as the body of Christ, we're God's answer to so many things. And so this morning, that's what I want to do. I just really want to shed some light for you on the issue of child sex trafficking. I would love to do that through sharing some of the Hope Refuge story, which is part of what I was founding, and just some of my personal challenges on the journey. So I always feel like, for me, I remember so much more when I'm hearing a story, and I think that's probably why Jesus told so many stories, because he knew we were going to remember and take in, and we can also relate to it as well. So before I start, I just want to give you an overview video of the program so you get an idea of it. And this is Hope Refuge.
Human trafficking of children is unfortunately extremely prolific here in Santa Barbara. The Central Coast is ripe for human trafficking and sex trafficking because we have a fairly affluent community, a tourist industry with lots of hotels, but also we are a corridor between the northern part of the state and the southern part of the state.
It is amazing how big human trafficking is in the U.S. and it's happening in all of our communities.
The issue of trafficking should pierce through our relatively naive perception of Santa Barbara as a paradise.
I grew up in a household with violence, and I never understood what love was. My mom, she's always doubted me in the past, saying that I'm nothing.
Before I came here, just me and my sister, we were on our own. We had to make money. We started going to juvenile hall. And we were just in and out the system. And we started going to group homes. I never really stayed at a placement long. And we just had to think for ourselves.
these are not adults making a choice. They've been coerced and tricked and brutalized in emotional and physical ways. So having a safe place where girls and boys can go to get treatment as they come out of their life is so vital. And one of the biggest issues we have today is a shortage of beds with a program specifically designed for minors and this complex level of trauma. And that's exactly what Hope Refuge Campus offers.
And the amazing thing about our facility is it's very remote, and these girls typically want to run. Whether things are going really well or things are going bad, they run.
The kids learn what manipulation tactics are used to groom kids so they can identify it and possibly veer away from it.
This is treatment. This is a whole package of education, mental health support, independent living skills, relationship building to move them along to successful adulthood.
I usually don't like trusting people or open up to people. The people here do make me feel safe and I can trust them. They give people chances. I can say I'm not the same person that came in here.
This is my vision board. My goals are to become an independent person and not be dependent on someone else. It makes me feel peaceful knowing that I am very much loved here.
Until we recognize that this isn't something that's happening somewhere else, that it's here, then we'll understand better the need for this type of placement, for this type of facility.
We can't look away from those among us who have been victimized.
In Santa Barbara, we set ourselves up as a place that cares for our children and our most vulnerable. We should live up to that. And to me, this is about moving up to that.
For us to serve more girls, we have launched a comprehensive campaign. So I ask you, if your heart was moved, stand with us and join us in this fight.
Okay, so that is a little bit about the program. I'm going to share with you about how that came about and really what's happening here in Santa Barbara. But I was thinking about today and I'm hearing that this whole series that you're doing really is about being a citizen of the kingdom and some of the values that are included in that and what that means for us. And so I kind of was thinking about that as I was pulling this together, and a passage came to mind that I really feel God had put on my heart around what we're doing. And it's this passage in Micah. And Micah 6 really is, well, a lot of Micah, particularly Micah 6, is really where this kind of debate's going on, or not debate, it's kind of, you know, back and forth going on with God, with the Israelites and God. They've been, you know, slaves to the Assyrians for so long, and they're just like feeling so trapped, so helpless, so powerless. And they're beseeching God, like, what's going on? Have you forgotten us? And this is the piece that I just really stood out to me, because it really kind of encompasses what I feel like God's wanting to say today. And that is this. It says, with what shall I come before the Lord? So this is where Micah starts to say, okay, what am I coming before the Lord with? Come on, Israelites. When I bow before God on high, should I come to him with burnt offerings, with year-old calves? How good does it get, he's saying. Would the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I present my firstborn for my transgressions, the first fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? Like, how much, how far do I go? He has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? But to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. And so for me, when I read this, it kind of just encompasses what we're going to be talking about. For me, I read that God doesn't want sacrifices and offerings. He's not looking for a specific type of offering. He's looking for a specific type of person. Specific type of heart. And it's the heart, it's our hearts that he's after, right? Actually, it's interesting that word mishpat, for you could do another time, I'll move forward in this quickly. It's really this acting justly is the word mishpat, which is about justice. It's about, you know, fairness. And when I was kind of unraveling the Hebraic understanding, they don't just see it as an act. It's not just this act that we're doing judicially, right? It's about the posture of your heart. And if we really are bringing fairness to our families, bringing fairness to our communities, then we're going to be it's really going to be about your posture towards the vulnerable and the poor in your community. And I thought that summed it up so beautifully, like what it really means to act justly. And so as we go into this issue of trafficking, as I pondered that, I was just thinking, like, if this is the heart of God, right, he is just, he's fair, it's who he is. If this is what he is doing, he's going to be challenging our hearts, right? He's challenging our hearts now. He's challenging our hearts to grow more in this area, to become more just. It's kind of who he is. So where in your life, as I move into this area of trafficking, where in your life right now is God challenging this area of justice? Is he challenging you to become more just? And I want you just to hold that as we start to look more at this. Because the one thing I've noticed when I think about history, when I think about the heroes of the faith who I love reading about all the time, when I take the word and look at just the men and women throughout the Bible, is that as people have stood up, as people's hearts have been shifted for the things that are going on in their community to bring justice, it has always come at a cost. It's always come at a cost. Ultimately, for Jesus, it cost him his life, right? We know that. So for me and my husband, Chuck, we're on this learning curve like the rest of us, learning how to be just in a really, right? I mean, we are facing a time of so much injustice, so much systemic poverty around us. It gets scary. People don't know where to start. People don't know where to look, right? And I hope our journey will be a little bit of an encouragement to you. But for us particularly, God's really broken our hearts for the commercial and sexual exploitation of children. So our journey began about 13 years ago. It's 2013, all right, 12 years ago. And we were living in Los Angeles. I'm from the entertainment industry. I'm a producer by nature. I was working at DreamWorks Animation. And my dreams were very much in the entertainment industry. That was my 25-year plan, my friends. Not this. but we went to visit a church one Sunday, slightly visiting here. I just popped in to see a friend. And this lady got up to give an announcement. And she was just sharing about something going on that week. But in it, she was from an anti-trafficking organization. No one was talking about trafficking at the time. But she said, the fastest growing criminal industry in the USA is now sex trafficking of children. And the average age of entry is 12 years old. And I went, sorry? Does that seem strange? What? Anyway, I was just totally taken aback. Thought I must have heard her wrong. Went up to her afterwards and said, please tell me that I heard you wrong. She went, let me tell you what's happening right outside on Hollywood streets underneath your nose. And started to tell me story after story. And I left that day and was like, whoa. Well, and we set us on a journey where we were like, okay, I want to know if this was really true. Like, what? Just started reading the books, deep diving into the internet, deep diving into what was really happening, what's the government saying, is anyone seeing this, the testimonies. Met with some of the girls, started meeting with this organization. And after about 6 to 8 weeks, we started to realize, wow, this really is modern day slavery at its worst. You see, what's happening is vulnerable children in our community, particularly those in the foster care where they don't have necessarily someone looking for them, are starting to be groomed by young men. They might show up at a party. A young man starts to woo them and pursue them as a boyfriend. And they've got this gap in their life. Maybe dad's not around. Maybe they're just more vulnerable because of the circumstances of their life. And he's going to give them everything she needs. Hair done, nails done, get her a phone, pick her up from school, take her out, access to things she wouldn't have access to otherwise, clothes, shoulder to cry on, an ear to listen. And we'll groom for 6 months, even a year, because she's going to make him a lot of money. And so she thinks she's just found the love of her life. And so she's bonded, and they start to get bonded. And before you know it, he's then going to start to ask her to do something. It might be a smaller thing to start with. It might be, honey, I've got myself into trouble and I just need to make some money tonight. And if you could just do this thing for me, it would be done. We'll be back to normal. But would you mind coming to this bachelor party and stripping? I won't let anyone touch you. And of course she doesn't want to. But the other fact we found out was that 85% of victims of gender abuse as a child. It is an issue in all of our communities across America that we're not talking about. So she's more about, she's like, well, authority, sex, and love is all mixed up anyway. So she does. And when she does that, he starts luring her into a life that she doesn't want to be in. And you might be thinking, well, why doesn't she just run? Clearly he's not Mr. Right. Well, she's a kid. She just wants the love back she had yesterday. She wants that man back she had yesterday, and he's going to play on that. Of course it's you that I want. Of course it's you. Even if he brings her into four other girls, it's you that I want. Look at the money you're making. You're made for this. You're designed for this. Look at this place in Hawaii that we're going to get next year. And so situations like that start to play out. Online, we found out about online community. People are getting trapped by falling for somebody online. You think maybe it's a friend to start with. Or even worse still, I'm starting to speak in schools where assemblies now to try and highlight this process of grooming, because you've got everyone's putting everything out there. Everybody, our kids are literally inhabit this place of the internet. Well, so do our predators. They're inhabiting it too. And so they start to see a beautiful girl. She starts telling them everything, you know, what she wants for her dreams and her life, and hate my mom right now, or this is going on at school, or here's my best friends. He's got all the information he needs. She wants to be a model. Wonderful. Shows up Saturday at the mall because now they've got maps that go with your social media, so everybody knows where everybody is. And so they show up. And they show up at the mall going, honey, you're beautiful. I'm a scout. I'm a model scout. And you are what I'm needing. I'm wanting. Look at this. And he probably has a genuine modeling gig for her to go to. But we'll start to lure her in. Start to lure her in. And then he's going to ask for the money for the photos that he's taken. And when she can't, he'll say, well, that's okay. Just come to the shoot tomorrow. But that shoot's going to be one where there's probably no clothes, maybe even a porn set. And now he's got things to hold over her. So things are starting, we're in a world where we start to realize this is not the black or white situation that I thought it was, that people aren't just being taken, people are being groomed. And so that became an eye-opener for us, and we realized, wow, this is the injustice that's being done to our kids right under our noses, and it's hidden. And the problem is, she just thinks, I'm just a bad girl who's made bad choices, and now I've got myself into a really bad situation. She does not see herself as a victim, which makes this really hard to identify who they are. But we determined that this really was modern-day slavery at its worst. It is a $52 billion industry. So make no mistakes, this is just big business. That is what this is. We have a demand. We have men, and I say men because it's 99% of buyers are male. We have a male demand. Now, because of that, we have someone willing to supply. And then we have the victims who are being served up for the demand. And unfortunately, because of our porn industry, a conversation for another time, we have a lot of fuel under the demand for children now. So this is where we landed in this space, my husband and I. We were like, we have no idea what we'll do, but we can't do nothing. We assumed it would be media. But I used to wake up, I was having a lot of nightmares at the time, as you can imagine, this is dark, right? This is dark, dark, dark. And I would wake up in these nightmares, and I just felt like God was saying, look, you don't have to come into this darkness if you don't want to. But this is where I am. This is where I go. Will you come? And I used to wake up with this quote from William Wilberforce, you know, and he says, you may choose to look the other way, but you can never again say that you didn't know. I used to wake up with that and be like, oh, okay. I don't have to know everything. We just did. So we just surrendered our hearts. We just said, okay, God, we want to be that mishpat. We want to be an answer here. And so we dived in. We jumped in helping and learning from those who were already in trafficking. Best thing you can do if you don't know what to do, dive in with organizations that are already doing something. We just dived in. We served. We brought our money. We did everything we could to serve what was going on. We met the girls, because that way you find your lane in it. That's how you find your lane in it. But after a few months, it was interesting, another God thing. After a couple of months, we ended up at this event in LA, They've got 50 survivors there, but they brought all of the continuum of care of anyone who would be touching a survivor in LA, from housing to law enforcement to probation to the courts. And in it, they shared at the time. They said, there's only 100 beds in all of America to serve this population. And so here's the thing, here's the statistic. We were saying at the time, it's up to 300,000, up to 325,000 a year getting touched by trafficking. We heard there was 100, it's actually 511 beds, but hey, it's a drop, it's a problem. And we were like, again, same thing, what? We're America, why do we have so few beds? And we're talking about beds with a program that specifically serves this level of complex trauma. The level of trauma is 10 times that of a veteran. So what happens is they end up in a group home, juvenile hall, they end up in psych wards, they're ending up ultimately running because nothing is meeting their need and they're called the AWOL population, so they run. So they really are now our homeless population, where they are the most vulnerable now on the streets. And so this cycle just keeps going. So once we found that out, we knew something, God was up to something, because a few weeks later, a friend of my husband's, Bob Ryan, who's the pastor down at Veronica Springs, who wasn't back then, he met my husband back in 2005, so like 8 years previous, they'd met in Africa in an orphanage, which is so funny, just lost touch, and he phones at that time, and says, hey, you know, he starts telling Chuck about what he's up to. He's up here in Santa Barbara, he's found this camp up at the top of Refugia, up by the Reagan Arch, and they're selling it, Presbyterians own it, and he's like, I proposed to them for me to use it, I really wanted to use it for at-risk kids and church retreats and things like that, because he used to run a camp. Really felt God on it, but they're not interested at all, so he was kind of crying in his beer, you know, kind of upset about it, and my husband's like, huh, well, how many beds does this camp have? He said, well, it's got a CUP, conditional use permit, for 124 beds. And we were like, what? And that's where passion and stupidity collided, as we say, for our family. Because we were like, wow, we could double the beds in America. You know, we were like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. Do you think they would talk to us? You know, we told him all about trafficking. His heart was wrecked the same way. And so we met with the president of the Presbyterians. And it was a 6-hour meeting. And his name's Rick, great friend of ours now, and told him everything that's happening, everything that we knew. And he just went, wow. Got up at the end of the 6-hour meeting, slammed his hands down. I have just spent 3 years convincing the board to sell this place. Now how am I going to convince them to keep it? You know? And there began the journey of Hope Refuge. Hope Refuge was birthed. This is the original Hope Refuge. We birthed back then, 2014, and it just took a few years working out, what could that look like? We kept bringing everyone up from LA, up to the space. It's this huge 214-acre ranch, being really neglected, so there was a lot to do. Again, not part of my 25-year plan to do it myself. No, I'm a producer, I bring everyone else to do this. But in 2015, to our surprise, the Presbyterians throw us the keys and say, hey, we're sick of you praying out all of our buyers. Which we were, story for another time. We might as well join you. So we're going to give you a year to figure it out. So we were like, oh, wasn't part of the plan. Because we better move up. So we moved up just for 6 months to kind of get the place back together, right? I'd actually just left DreamWorks to be a full-time mom. I moved up with a one-year-old. So we move up to the top of this mountain, and it's like a mission field because you are in the middle of nowhere. Right, I'm a city chick. I was not wanting to live up in this mountain. Like, you know, this was like the wilderness for me. But I knew we were in God's plan. I knew we were following the grace, if that makes sense. So it took a long time, but eventually, after 6 months, we yielded. We felt invited, actually, is the word I would say. I felt really invited into something that God was doing. And we didn't 100% know what. There was a moratorium at first, at the beginning, on group homes, so we couldn't even open a group home. But in 2017, they lifted all that, and we applied to become a short-term residential treatment program. This is the camp up here. 214 acres, there's about 13 buildings, three cottages, three dorms that we turned into cottages, and So it's beautiful, beautiful space. And we spent from 2015 when we arrived to the end of 2019 redoing the place. Literally, churches would just come up and redo roofs. People would come up, they'd do tours and go, I'm going to give you 10,000 square feet of flooring and labor. I'm going to do the skylights. I'm going to do the tile. I'm going to do the paint. And the whole place got put back together. It was just, God's hand was all over it. Only God. And we just knew how much he loved his kids. And I can't tell you the amount of miracles that went on in that journey, because I was ready to leave many times. And every time I was ready to leave, my husband was not. Every time he was ready to leave, I was not. And God would speak so beautifully to us in the process of how much he loved these girls and how much he wanted the land as well. So that was a process for us. So in end of 2019, we got licensed, and we are the highest level of care that we can give kids in our state. So it's very intensive care, very heavy on the mental health. And then the real work began. All of you will remember what you were doing on March 2020?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, you were all pulling back and closing your doors. No, we were opening ours. So just says a lot about the way we flow upstream the wrong way. But yeah, we opened our doors in 2020, and our first girl, when she came, her name was Nevaeh, heaven spelt backwards. We could just feel God all over it, and there began a journey. But like any startup, so we're the largest level of, largest facility that there is in California. We were originally licensed for 24 beds, so no, we're not 100 beds. You wouldn't want to do that with that many traumatized girls. 24 beds, two to a room, but we're now 16 actually just because of a federal law, but it'll go back up to 24. So we didn't have any roadmap. We didn't have anyone else doing what we were doing. So like any startup, we faced the challenges of the startup. And that would have been fine if we were able to stay in our lane. The aim was we had a program director, and my husband and I were more back in the business, right? Because this is not what we do. But we always knew there was a risk. And after 6 months, we ended up with a loss of our director. We had to let him go. And that drew us into the daily day operations. That's fine. It's a startup. You have to do what you have to do. Finding a new director, though, was really tough. We also had the challenge of quick growth to serve the huge need that there is out there, and to try and grow up to this 24 as quickly as possible. So we went from 15 employees to 50 in almost 12 months. And anyone knows in business the challenge of that. We also went through all of our firsts. We had our first girl to run, you know, the first suicide ideation, the first fight. And then you have to review all your policies and renew everything. And so it was just a lot of up and down in the midst of COVID. It was really tough, 24/7, dealing with crisis and being out of our lane. Not to mention the vicarious trauma that we were beginning to deal with ourselves. And every time something would come up, you didn't really have time to process it because there's something else to deal with. And we were just trying to really focus on our staff and deal with their vicarious trauma. The work never ceased. 2 years in, Chuck and I were really struggling, really struggling. We were also trying to raise our 8-year-old child. We had many dark nights. Honestly, we were just dying, really dying. And I was personally really beginning to lose hope of us being able to sustain this and make it a success. I actually felt really trapped. And 2 years in, I felt so, so alone. We kind of disappeared. Even though we'd actually brought down in town because we'd come off the mountain. And a sense of hopelessness just kind of started to embrace me as I just couldn't see a way forward and a way out. I was so struggling in this time to hear God. Really struggled when I so desperately needed to hear from him. I don't know if any of you can relate to that sense of, you know, just such disappointment when you feel like you've stepped out in the right way, you feel like you've made the right steps, and you're making a step towards helping others. Nothing seems to be working out how you thought it should. Amazingly, despite how we were feeling, the girls were doing amazingly. We just saw so much transformation. To date now, we've served over 90 girls. even in the midst of the chaos at the beginning. But I'd like you to meet Mari. She was one who arrived with us at 17 years old, was close to dropping out of school completely, just to be another foster care statistic, in and out of group homes. She was running a lot, and that's what made her vulnerable to pimps. So she was being exploited that way. And now she's beginning to act out her pain. Drinking, smoking, aggressive behavior, and found herself in juvenile hall. So when she arrived, she had major trust issues, like they all do. Did not see herself as a victim, though. She was with us for just under a year, and she was given the chance to catch up with her schooling, graduated high school, ended up as an A-grade student, started part-time work downtown with us while she was with us, ended leaving with $5,000 in her pocket. She actually called herself junior staff or the boss lady by the end. She was just such a sweetie. But let her share with you what it was like for her.
My name is Amory, but they call me Mari. I've been in Olive Crest in Santa Barbara for around 11 months, and I should be meeting soon. Before I came to Olive Crest, I was in a situation where I was in another group home that lacked structure, so I was stuck around the lifestyle of, you know, wanting to smoke, wanting to drink, and do bad things, which I ended up leaving, and I was on the streets, not making the right choices. I feel like I had nobody. And then I ended up getting incarcerated. I ended up choosing to come to Olive Crest, and they accepted me. For them to be able to, like, you know, bring me into their program and giving me the benefit of the doubt. That's when I started my new journey, and I was able to become the boss lady. Well, my first thought of when I came up this mountain was, I'm not used to this type of lifestyle, so it was different for me. I just learned a lot of things, but especially with therapy, I was able to talk to my therapist, and she was able to help me heal as I go through past trauma. It also helped me in ways that I know that I'm worthy. And I think that's when I started to embrace the program and what the qualities they had. I just started to feel like a weight off my shoulders. So I just was able to be free, be myself. I have grown a lot. I have matured while I was here, you know, just getting the help that I needed, and just to be able to have a support team, knowing that I have a support team behind me when I transitioned to my apartment. You know, you have to struggle before.
So Mari went on to a transitional house, which is sort of the older girls do. So she was 18. And so she's with Olive Crest still in a transitional living. So she's still getting some support, which allows her to grow in a safe environment. So, yeah, keep praying for Mari and the other girls like her who've gone on. But even though the girls were getting the justice that they deserved and experiencing hope and transformation, we would die. 2 years in, I was desperately crying out to God. I could hear nothing. Things were not changing. If anything, things got worse for me because the stakes were so high. We put everything in, everything. And I just found myself questioning all my decisions, questioning everything. Had I made a wrong step? Was the father disappointed? What had I done? Nights were the darkest time as I struggled to find any peace in the chaos of our world. With the chaos within. We really had no idea what to do. And in fact, it was a mentor who said to us at the time, it's kind of really difficult because if you guys leave now, the baby's too young. You know, the baby dies. But if you stay, you die. So it was like, trapped. I really resonated with, you know, how the Israelites must have felt in Micah. You know, they're just, they've been entrapped, they've felt so enslaved for so long, can't understand where God is, but know him to be true in this. I was very angry, actually. A lot of it came out in anger. I didn't realize that was that what was in there, and I could feel my heart hardening with offense. I was getting very offended at how God was allowing this to happen. What was he doing? One night, though, in this time, Chuck had a dream that was particularly dark, and it involved our son, and we knew that we couldn't go any further. We knew God wasn't wanting to sacrifice the family, so we got up at 3 o'clock in the morning and just prayed, and we just literally handed it over. It was like a letting go moment, you know? Can't say we knew what we were going to do, we just let go and left it in the Lord's hands, and it felt a little bit like we were putting the baby in the grave, if that makes sense. We didn't know what was happening. But it's hard. I realized then it's hard to lean back on God if you don't believe that he's ultimately good. Right? What was starting to be exposed for me in that fire needed to be exposed to me because I did not know it was there. And it was this. I believed that God was good. I could see that he was good to the girls. I could see the transformation going on in their lives. I could see the transformation going on in others at certain points in my life, but in other people's lives, but I didn't believe he was that good to me. And that's what that started to expose in my heart. And I needed his merciful intervention. I needed his mercy. I needed the mercy, and I needed to humble myself. Interesting how justice and all of that came together for me, because in the end, when I didn't understand, when I'd seemingly moved in the right way, here I am, face to face with the worst. Kind of part of the way of the cross. I had to just humble myself. And God's mercy flowed in. When I realized what was happening in my heart, I was able to let go. God did. And I was in counseling. I mean, we had some work to do. But I realized all I had to fall back on then was the nature of God. That was it. There was nothing else to fall back on. So if your nature of your God isn't that good, are you really going to fall back? So we've got to keep challenging our hearts this way. So as I let go, God did do a deep work in me, and all I knew was that my Father is good and that he will get us through this no matter what the outcome is. He'll get us through. And I have good news for you. He did get us through. He did. God showed up miraculously very shortly after that night. And after some just work that the Lord was doing, we'd been in communications with Olive Crest about them coming and acquiring the program. They're a 50-year-old Christian organization in human services, adoption, foster care, residential, transitional house, all the things that are needed in the continuum, doing what they do, right? Not what we don't do. And we've been talking to them, and they hadn't originally thought they were going to, you know, they were like, well, we haven't expanded for 20 years, you know. But he called us shortly after that, and we just said, we can't go any further. He said, give me 24 hours. Went to his board, who'd already been discussing it, and they would be like, we've been waiting for you, Donald, to say yes, because we feel God on this. They were unanimous. Our board was unanimous. And they came and acquired the program in March 2022. Mm-hmm. And so it became Olive Crest Hope Refuge Campus. And so they are amazing, amazing at what they do. And we are so excited. You've got actually our flyer there. The amazing thing is, God and his goodness, has we stayed on board. So we've stayed on board with Olive Crest. So we want to see the baby thrive. We're back in our lane doing development and community engagement. I'm working to expand this issue and get this issue out into the community. And so God came through in his mercy. God came through in his justice for me as well. It's always coming through. You can see it happen in the girls' lives so much easier, maybe, to see from the outward perspective. But we have to see that justice happen in our own hearts and in our own lives as well in order for us to continue to stand, because it will cost us something to stand. Look at the state of our communities right now. Look at the voices that are rising. Look at the craziness that's happening. It doesn't really matter what you believe. You don't have to look far to go, wow, we're a mess. We're in a mess. And if we're going to be the ones that stand to say, God, I believe you can bring fairness and treatment, fairness to all through us, then we've got to know he's going to do it for us too. And that is part of the journey. It's not an overnight thing. It's that intimate relationship with the Lord. And so I just want to encourage you as you're following the way of Jesus, as you start to look at an issue like this, very welcome, by the way. Everybody welcome to come and do a tour of Hope Refuge if you want to engage more. Think, how can I engage? Feel comfort. Come up, do a tour, see what's going on. Come and just see what's happening. Get to know us and come and engage. We'd love to invite you into joining us. We also have an event at the end of the month up at Sunstone Winery. If you like having a glass of wine and celebrating and fundraising, then please join us. It's on the 28th. I think you've got an invite there with you. Please sign up. Love, love, love to have you all. And it's a great one to bring friends to because we have Alia Azaria, who is a survivor leader now. She's amazing. Which is what we assume is going to be our girls. See, it's our girls who graduate Hope Refuge who are going to be the ones that bring an end to this issue. We've got to believe that. I believe that. Mari's boss lady, oh my gosh, that girl's going to change the world. She is. She's amazing. When she's ready, God's worked out the oaks of righteousness in her. She'll be ready. But Alia lives in Ventura. And when she was a kid, she'd go to high school in Ventura. Grandma would drop her off. Dad wasn't around. She would leave high school, get on the bus, come up to Santa Barbara, where her pimp is and the demand is. So Santa Barbara, not only are we a corridor town, but we're also a tourist city. And because we're a tourist city, there's now sex tourism, such a thing as sex tourism. There is a demand here, unfortunately. And so we have to keep our eyes open and become aware of this. Well, we can bring some training sessions to you too. Very happy to do that. If that's something else that the church would want to engage in, very happy to bring some training so people can feel like, oh, what do I do when I notice it, you know, and see it happening? But I have to say, God is so just, because if you'd met me 2 years ago, seriously, I've done. I love God, but I was like, I am done, peace out, I'm out of ministry, want nothing to do with this, I'm done, I've done, done. In fact, I used to talk about going and living by a beach and drinking Mai Tais. I've never had a Mai Tai. And I remember getting in the car once after a counseling session, and I sat in the car, and all I heard the Lord say was, Sally, you want to go have a Mai Tai? I'll come to the beach and have a Mai Tai with you. And I just felt his like, you do what you need to do, sweetie. I got you. Well, 2 years on, I'm more passionate than ever. Only he can renew your strength like that. And there ain't no way I'm not going to carry going back to that mountain and facing this giant. And it is a giant. There is. We have a giant to face out. The fact that our children are being bought. That is our reality. And there's so many reasons why. But maybe a conversation. But I really do want to open it up to the floor. If you've got questions around trafficking, you've got questions around this, or I'd love just to finish off with just some Q&A with you. If you want to ask anything, Nikki, I know you'd like that for people to do that. But so, yeah. Anyone got any questions? So, yes.
Do they offer any of this information in high schools?
Starting to, very slowly. It's been great. It's been closed. Literally, okay. The education supervisor were completely close to this, but they're not. That's changed this season. Yes, that's right. So, yeah, they're starting the human trafficking. I'm part of the human trafficking task force. I wanted to show you some of those statistics. That is from the human trafficking task force. So this is just statistics for those who have been in a case. So any the cases that have happened in Santa Barbara from 2017 to 2023, 229 survivors have been discovered in those cases, and 60% of them are under the age of 24.
That you know of?
Just cases going through the DA's office. This is just cases in the DA's office that we know of. 41% of those were Santa Barbara residents. So this is very alive and well here. I mean, it's just even the last year that's doubled. Yeah.
What can we do? What can I do?
I love it when people are excited. Well, we'd love you to engage now. I mean, what the best way is find an organization to start with, just get in. Like, come do a tour at Hope Refuge, find out a little bit about you, and then we'll equip you in whatever God's doing with you. You know, and I think that's the thing, is finding out God's going to put this issue as the issue for your heart, then he'll equip you. But come up, come do a tour. I've got a sign-up thing for people to come and sign up, and we'll get hold of you. Come and do a tour, and we'll share more with you. And ways in which you can actually engage, whether it's down here off the mountain with the girls. There's lots of opportunities with the girls too. It just takes a little bit more work and involvement and commitment. Yes?
So at the mission conference, one of their lanes or whatever was human trafficking. And Jeff
Schaefer.
Yes.
Yes.
And so one of my frustrations has been that many people have been working on this for many years, and they seem to oftentimes stay in their own lane instead of intersecting and empowering each other. And so...
good observation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was very... That saddens me, because people have very willing hearts and wanting to... But is there more
collaboration?
Yeah.
You know what? Santa Barbara is doing a great job right now at really starting to really. Because collaboration can mean different things to different people. But the Human Trafficking Task Force is about 28 organizations that we pull together to get things moving, to really try and move the needle for our county. We've pulled together an action plan for long term, short term, and medium term. And we're acting on that, and so schools is one of those. So that's why we've got pilots going on right now up in Lompoc. I've been able to get in to do some assemblies, and I speak on grooming. So I share a Santa Barbara situation. They all go, it happened in Santa Barbara, and I said, you don't want to end up at Hope Refuge. Let's just see if we can go back. Let's go prevention. Let's go back here. This is how it's happening. And when they're aware of it, you know, that's when they can protect themselves and protect others. So we want to do more of that. But yes, I mean, I think that's the nature of human services is difficult, just because people are so busy doing their own thing. It's not people don't want to. You've heard my story. I mean, for 2 years, people didn't even see Chuck and I. Our donors literally saw nothing of us because we were so engaged in the day-to-day. We disappeared off the face of the earth. And so that wasn't the lack of wanting to engage in the community. It was just we were in survival. And so depending where people are at on their journey, but yeah, we collaborate a lot now with other organizations. And that's the great thing about Olive Crest. They have the ability to bring so much more to this community. So they literally, we need transitional housing for survivors. We need a lot more prevention. So Olive Crest right now, I'm in discussions around, and we're literally exploring where really are the gaps with our school. Because if we can identify early enough at school and prevent and have a case management going on, so they don't have to end up at Hope Refuge. That's a huge piece. Olive Crest may fill a gap there. So that's the great thing. So it's going to be a journey. But yeah, keep praying. Seriously, keep praying. Very much needed. I think with Kingdom Causes taking on the trafficking task force, I think that's changing it a lot because there's movement. People are attracted to movement. Yes.
SBAC.
Yes, they're part of the Human Trafficking Task Force. Yeah. Yes, you know it's SBAC. Yeah.
The girls are students, many of them, and are they wanting to be in school or
I didn't mention that. Yes, yeah, so we have an on-site school. It's one of the big successes of the program. We felt it was detrimental. So we're up by the Reagan Ranch, tippy top of Refugio.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's what's the great success of the program. It's also a challenge of the program.
Yeah.
So we felt it was detrimental to come off, so we've actually got an on-site school. We partnered with Trivium, which is an independent online school. Each of them has their own independent learning. And it's become a huge success because you can get a credit in a week. If you work hard enough, you get a credit in a week, they're starting to get C's, B's, A's, and they start competing, and they're like, and so literally, they're not just graduating GEDs, which is what they can do, they're graduating high school with us. And great, because now they've got options, because that's what the pimps use against them. You know, you're made for this, honey, look at you, you know? God's designed you for this, and what else are you gonna do? Go work at Starbucks for $25 an hour, you know how to make 500 in 15 minutes. Like, that's the torment they have to undo. And so education gives them an option. But yes, we do have a school. I'd love to show you the school. It's the piece that we really need to invest in because we fully fund that ourselves, which is expense, obviously.
Lisa, can you pass the...
Yes. I wasn't aware of, like, the amount of grooming that goes on. I figured there'd be some, but I had no idea. I just thought maybe they were just, you know, like plucking the kids, like just stealing them from their environment and, you know, dipping them and So the grooming process, that is so
scary
and it could be so good to be able to recognize
the signs,
the signs as adults and serving for the children that are.
But just very quickly, you start to notice any of your teens around you who start to isolate themselves, because that's one of the key things I'll do is isolate. I'll start having access to, you know, designer clothes and things that they wouldn't normally have access to, getting their hair done, nails done. You could, someone's in their life, older man or older woman, always on the scene. It's a given.
And are pimps both men and women?
Pimps generally are male, but they do have recruiters and madams.
Like the in the movie.
They literally have, it's almost like a hierarchy. It's awful, but they call the lead, says everything about how they manipulate. They call, and you rise up, right? So you don't have to you don't have to sell your body so much. You can become a bottom bitch, of course.
A what?
A bottom bitch. She's the head. She's the head of the girls.
Madam. Sure.
But just that derogatory, you're a commodity. Remember who you are. It's just atrocious. It's the greatest injustice against women and children. Can you think of anything worse than as a child and having to sell your body 14 times a day? We had a girl run because we got forced off the mountain for evacuation this year. Because we were all ready to stay in place because we have people who live up there, but the fire service said, nah, I'm going to go. So we had to go off and she doesn't want to be in a hotel. This young lady had been with us for 8 months, the longest she's ever been anywhere, having an incredible recovery, didn't want to be in a hotel. And she's reckless in the way that she does things. Anyway, just been found. So, gosh, that's 2 months in. I was down looking at her in Ventura. It's kind of crazy, the story. But, yeah, she's in a bad state. She was living with a 40-year-old man, well, been bought by a 40-year-old man in Santa Maria, and had been with him for the last 3 weeks. And her body's just a mess. That's it.
When the women or kids come, like, do some of the pimps get in trouble? Like, are they able to, like, report who?
Yes, that will, for some of them, there'll be open cases, legal cases, but we don't pursue that when they're with us because they're in recovery. Mm-hmm. We made a mistake early on. Opening a case with a girl or allowing them to continue the case with a girl while she's with us, and it's traumatic because the girls tend to happen is Stockholm syndrome. They're in love, so they recognize it's wrong now. They recognize they've been exploited. They recognize he didn't love them, but if they have to face him out in court or see him at any point, they will cower. Yeah, it takes a lot. So the system is changing slightly, not having to face them. It is now great news come through just this last month. So we're actually at the turn of the year. SB 14 is now a felony to be trafficking of any kind. So recruiting, even if you're a recruiter. So we've got recruiters in our schools. We have recruiters in our schools.
Wow.
So these are people either they're making money or they don't want to be pimping themselves out. Like they don't want it. So they're looking after themselves and their families. So the pimp's threatening them. You don't go and find someone else, I'm going to go and get your sister. So they look for a lonely, you know, unhappy girl in school and they're recruiting. Bring them to a party. Blah, blah, blah. The whole system goes out. So, yeah. Yeah, sorry, you've been arguing on
all. No, I'm new to this thing. I work for the government. I'm an investigator for the state of California.
Oh, wow.
For the California Civil Rights Department, I investigate rape and sexual assault. Hate crimes. And I found out 6 months ago that our jurisdiction is going to expand to sex trafficking.
Wow.
So we've had some initial training. It's all from lawyers. It's about case elements and prima facie and remedy and what's against the law and the gateway from civil to criminal.
Yeah.
It's all about remedy, getting the money. But in about 3 months, I'll be starting engaging with these people that are victims of sexual trafficking.
Mm.
So is there, and I like the treatment component, and they've actually given us some training on treatment. So I guess I have two questions. One, is there, like when I'm engaging with these girls, is there a number I can give them for like a Christ-centered treatment? And the second question is, as far as residential treatment centers, they gave us a training on that, and they're telling us that like the private residential treatment centers they're just exploding. The beds are always full. So it's the, and they're trying to-
And there's too few beds, they just aren't the beds.
So my question is like, what, is the issue with your agency not being able to fill beds, or is it just price centered?
No.
Are the insurance money or where?
No, we get paid by the state. 80% of our funds are covered by the state. No, our biggest issue personally at Hope Refuge is staffing. So we pulled right back for the Olive Crest transition, and so now we're ramping up again. And so we've just now got into our, we've got three cottages of six. We're going into our second cottage, and now we've got up to 12. But literally, it's about staffing. Expensive to live here in Santa Barbara. So we're trying to be as creative as possible. We've got tiny homes and things like that. We need more tiny homes, but all of that's funding. So, yeah, that's a big issue is staffing, and you'll find that most places since COVID has been a big issue. So you could just really pray into that because, you know, God's bigger than that. But it's hard. Residential is hard. And so a lot of the human services, places like Olive Crest, who have lots of different things going on, they're choosing not to go into that because, particularly in California, the licensing is so awful. It's awful to be under licensing. You know, sometimes they're not serving the kids. And like right now, they're trying to make us give kids phones. They don't have phones or internet access with us because you need to recover, right? And we're like, no, we're not going to. What? If they were running every night, we'd give them a phone because that's safe. If they're running every night, you want them to be safe. But they're not. Our girls don't run. So we have to. Things like that are really hard to deal with licensing. And so people are choosing not to do it. So you're going to find that. But there are numbers. I mean, this is, we're a Olive Crest. What happens is they come to us through social services and probation. That's how the girls find Hope Refuge. And so we get packets every day, loads of packets every day, just saying, hey, will you take this girl? She's suspected. And we have to work out, you know, who we can cater to.
Right? Is that like from like Mission Harbor or the local intermediary, like the outpatient services? Like they were, who references the
social services?
Okay, that's government.
So they have a social worker, yeah.
Okay.
And otherwise probation through juvenile hall.
Okay.
So if they've been in juvenile hall, they've got a probation officer. If they're under child welfare right now, they've got a social worker. And anyone who might, you know, if someone found their niece could be, if you report that to child welfare, then she can come under child welfare and get services as funding. So just FYI.
And so we'll hold the questions.
Please feel free to
come talk. Yeah, you can come and talk after, exactly. But we're, I mean, can we give Sally a hand? Send a hand in prayer, and is that okay if I pray?
Yes, please.
Okay. God, thank you that you are a God of justice. And God, we are created in your image, and so we also long for justice. We long for wholeness. We long for broken things to be made right. And so God, thank you for Sally. Thank you for her life and for Chuck and for the ways that they have responded to your call. But God, we've also seen the demonstration of profound humility, of brokenness at your feet. And Lord, we know that you are at work healing Sally, healing Chuck, God, from these experiences. And God, all of us have darkness inside of us. All of us perceive different kinds of darkness in our world. But God, we trust and we stand in solidarity with Sally, declaring that you are good, that you are a good, good Father. And so we just pray for Hope Refuge. We pray for Olive Crest. We pray for staffing. We pray for resources. We pray, God, for wisdom and trust and hope. Lord, thank you for Sally. Continue to bless the words that come from her mouth. Bless the work of her hands. Bless the compassion in her heart. And Lord, if anyone is being stirred to act in this way, in this cause, Lord, would you give them a path forward? Would you walk with them? So we bless Sally and Hope Refuge in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
And thank you so
much.
Thank you
so much for having me.